Welcome to Season 7 of Retrain Your Brain with me, Chartered Psychologist Dr. Audrey Tang. It's the show where being mentally healthy is not simply about just being able to cope, but also being able to thrive. And I'm going to give you the tools to get there. The Health and Safety Executives state that one in four people in the UK will experience mental health issues, and this is further aggravated by work-related stress. More concerning is that any statistics are only the numbers being reported, and with mental suffering often being invisible until one nears crisis point, it is clear we need to do more. So for this very special guest episode, I'm delighted to welcome Abigail Tennant. Abigail is a best-selling author with her book Beautifully Broken, and is now working to raise awareness of neurodiversity, especially in the workplace, and to help others overcome their emotional and mental barriers, finding professional and personal success through her company Attuned Mindset.
Welcome to Retrain Your Brain, Abigail.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. I'm like a kid at Christmas.
Oh, it's fantastic. And I love the enjoyment and passion in your voice. That really keeps me buzzing as well. Great. Now, you are a best-selling author with Beautifully Broken. So tell me about this book and how you've arrived to where you are today.
It was quite heart-wrenching when I was thinking about the book, because I had to go back through my timeline of life events. In everywhere I've worked, something has happened, whether it be a personal conflict or a conflict within myself, even going further back to school. And I've had conversations with my mum saying, have I seen it right in my head? Did this play out right how I remember it? And especially with the school, and thinking about when I was really bullied, and I was bullied by my friends because I didn't want to move to the other group because they were getting bullied even more. So I'd stay with the cool kids, but I wasn't a cool kid at all. So all these trendy fashions my friends had and I didn't. And I'd have the two stripes, not the three Adidas stripes.
Yeah.
And I remember begging my mum to please get me a pair of Adidas tracksuit bottoms. And in the end, she said yes. And she took me to the sale rail and she said, pick some. And I remember getting a pair and I went into school and I was like, check out my tracksuit bottoms. And then they laughed at me and said, they're not even the right ones. Like, what are they? Are they from the sale section? I was just absolutely mortified. And now as a mum, I can totally see where she was coming from. So my mum's taught me that value and I didn't see it at the time. But I just felt like I had to fit in. I had to follow the crowd. And I never did.
And you also had quite a nasty relationship breakdown as well.
During the breakdown was really difficult. There was a lot of deception. You have a gut instinct and you know something's not right and something's going on. And when you ask the questions, will you just tell me? And you get told it's nothing. But you know it is. And I tend not to speak too much about it because he's got his own view of what happened. Mm-hmm. And he's the father of my children. So I don't want to offend him or my children, despite what he put me through. I'm actually better for going through it and coming out the other end of it. But because I kept suppressing it and just smiling and saying, I'm fine. I've got it together. Being a mum, going through everything, having to change a number of jobs because he kept changing what he was doing. I ended up on a stroke unit. I was in a work at a call centre and I just remember trying to end the call with my mouse and then shouting my manager and saying, I can't move the mouse. The paramedic who came out separately said, I need you to go to the hospital and get checked out. And then I got there and I just remember a lady coming in and she was like, hi, I'm from the stroke unit. I've been told if you show any signs of weakness, we have to admit you. I just couldn't grip. I couldn't push against her hand. 3 days before I actually regained the control so that they would let me go home. But thankfully, it wasn't a stroke. And that's when I realized just how powerful the mind is. Mm. And if we do not look after it, it will give us some signs in a physical form. It's that message that I kind of wanted to get across to people. Don't hold it all in. Like, let it out. Speak to someone. Speak to anyone. Speak to yourself. I do that often.
in every chapter, what I love is that you actually put the toolkit in there. So as we're learning about what's going on, we're processing with you how your mindset's changing. And that's absolutely inspiring.
I wrote the book because people kept saying, how are you still smiling? How are you still positive? I thought, I just am. But then the more I thought about it, the more I realized I was putting things in place as my toolkit to support my mental health and to support me in the way that I go forward. And I stopped thinking about what other people thought, stopped trying to be like other people. And I hope that that's what the book does. And even writing the book, I'd actually been for my cervical check and it came back abnormal. And before the book, I'd have probably freaked out, but writing the book, I was just like, okay, we'll take it as it is. It's been caught early. The doctors know what they're doing. And it turned out I had to go in for an operation to, because it was a larger area than they would normally expect. So it's like I said, things just keep coming and coming and coming. And there's a part in the book where I just say, why me? And I still sometimes say, come on, where's my break? When am I going to get let off in life? And I don't think you ever do.
One of the definitions of neurodivergence, which I really like, is having a brain that functions in ways that diverge significantly from the, and I'll use quote marks, dominant societal standards of normal. And one thing that does come through whilst you're speaking and whilst reading the book as well is a lot of the time you're asking yourself, why me? Is this my fault? Is it me? And do you think that this is a very common reaction that anybody who has any form of neurodiversity experiences? I know you talk about dyslexia as one example of this, but this must be quite a common thing.
I wasn't diagnosed till I was 25. So I'd spent my whole life bumbling through, wondering why I didn't fit in and why I was different, or people seemed to make me feel like I was different. I definitely thought I was thick, but then going to university and seeking the support and being passionate about what I was doing, I came out with a first. And honestly, I thought there was a technical error and they'd sent me the wrong results. Thinking, no, surely, like, what? And I just remember looking at it for such a long time and then tearing up and thinking, oh my God, like, what, how have I done that? And then just thinking, all my life I've thought I'm thick and I've come and got a first. And even doing it, people were saying to me, oh, as long as you pass, that's good. As long as you're doing your best.
Ugh.
And I'm just like, yeah, I get that. But, and then I got a first and it was, well, it is just a degree. And I'm thinking, you're still putting me down. It was never to prove to anyone I can get a first and to have this arrogant attitude about getting a first. It was, do you realize how much I have put into doing this? This is an achievement. I had a couple of mental health breakdowns throughout my 3 years. I'm raising 2 kids. Working, writing and publishing a book. I'm running workshops to help people overcome. And then I had to write the dissertation in lockdown. So it's just like, again, why me? Like, come on, give me a break. I'm really trying here. Something's got to give, but it has. If I look at it all, everything's led to where I am now. So I've gone through it all for a reason. Hopefully I've gone through it so other people don't have to. Maybe that's why I'm here on earth.
I think that leads to another quote I came across today, which I also love. And that is, I don't suffer from dyslexia. I suffer from people's ignorance, misunderstanding and judgment. And I just thought, yeah, you know what? That sounds about right. So
yeah, I agree with that.
You are so passionate about people understanding and being aware of what others are going through, what do you wish someone had said to you, or you had the courage to say to someone when you were going through all of this?
If you allow someone to follow their passion and to submerge themselves in what makes them happy, you're going to get a really good employee in that particular area, regardless of their, I'll do quote, disability. And I think if you have been diagnosed with it, own it and say, yes, so this is me, but this is what I have to offer. And I've learned that only now at 34, really, that dyslexia is my superpower. And that, yes, my grammar is atrocious and I muddle my words and I often write things down and it doesn't always make sense. But the underlying tone of it is it's coming from a good place. Yeah. And the idea is there.
But that's, I think, a very, very good point there, because when we're talking about neurodiversity, we're talking not just dyslexia, but it can include autism, it can include ADHD, it can include dyscalculia and so on. Yeah. But who is to say what is going to be needed? Exactly as you've said, with the pandemic, what is normal? So it can be that the way that somebody who sees things in a different way sees the world might be the very thing we need later on.
Yes.
And I know this is something that you are now working to combat in the workplace through training, through offering support and consultancy. So yeah. What do you think is lacking in the current practice of occupational psychology?
First thing is education. Mm-hmm. Knowing about different things that can impact the employment sector, who's going to be coming into your business. That they're quite rigid. People seem very structured in organization, and a sense of lack of open-mindedness. It's people are not willing to see that change is going to happen and that it's continuously happening. There's students that are coming through the system and they don't know how to look after themselves properly. They don't know how to manage their money. They're not really taught how to deal with rejection, which you get a lot, especially in the workplace while you're trying to compete against different people. CVs are still really structured and don't really allow you to show who you are. It's just, what have you done? Bullet point. And people will just pick and choose what they want from it. I think we just need to change the discussion, and it has to start with leaders. It has to, the people who are at the top, because that's where it filters through. And why wouldn't an organization want a thriving workforce that is fully supported in a great culture and a great place to work? Like, I honestly want to bash my head on the desk and just be like, I don't get why people are not getting this.
No, I get where you're coming from. And I think you have the same struggle as a lot of us in the practice of mental health, in that we are talking about mental wellness. We're not just talking about the removal of suffering or the removal of illness. We are talking about being able to thrive, all of us, no matter how we think, how we live, what our culture is, what our background is, and so on. Exactly. And with that, I know your book is just packed with wonderful tools. Could you give us one that maybe we could use today if we're thinking, yeah, you know what, I'm going to make a change in my mindset, I want to do something. What would you advise us to do?
The one thing that everyone probably is aware of, and that's gratitude. That's just being thankful for what you already have. Because life's so fast-paced, we seem to want to chase the next thing and the next thing, that we don't appreciate the thing before that.
Given that, what does your future look like to you?
Amazing. In one word, it's something that I'm just going to take with whatever opportunity comes my way. I will address it as it comes, but I do see me speaking on a much larger platform. I see myself doing big arenas and just bringing life back to people, helping organizational leaders to change their mindset and the way that that filters through to their HR processes, their recruitment, and just to really get people thinking about thriving as an individual, as an organization, just living the best life you can, because the tools and the resources, they're all there. The making the ingredients, that they're all there. We just need to find out which one's going our pot to make the best dish.
That is a world I would definitely love to work and live in, and in fact flourish in. Thank you so much, Abigail. Now, if we want to find out more, how can we get hold of you?
www.attunedmindset.co.uk, and it's got all the information about me on there. The book link is on there, and also a contact page, and LinkedIn. I'm all over LinkedIn, so find me on there.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And that's all we have time for today. But you can continue your wellness journey with my YouTube channel, Dr. Audrey Tang, Tools to Thrive, or with my books and articles on my website, www.draudreytang.com, or tune in to NLive Radio 106.9 FM on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. for the Wellbeing Lounge.